Here's Reverend Maria.
Thank you, Connie. Thank you, Sherry. I was wanting a song about light today, so there you are. Perfect. And speaking of light, the chapter concludes, "I see it. O God, the veil is thin between. We do mingle with the hosts of heaven. I see it, and I shall speak no more." And so begins the long journey into light in February of 1959, which will conclude on the earthly plane on April 7th of 1960. This is the last year of Ernest's life and emerging so completely into that light. For an extraordinarily deep spiritual being who has spent his entire life immersed in the feeling, the knowing, the expression of oneness, here he stands at the doorway in between two worlds. For those that have heard me speak of this talk before, which is my favorite, I have always referred to this as the Elvis has left the building moment, where we start to see that Elvis is leaving us. And the idea that his deep connection to spirit that has forever anchored his life is calling him into the next dimension is the most natural, beautiful, powerful gift that he can give to us. And so this experience in a room full of people that love him and that he loves is a gift that has resonated throughout the ages. And I was so grateful for Judy's talk last week when she was sharing cosmic consciousness experience and near-death experience. And you said something really amazing that's hung out with me in my head since I've listened to it, Judy. And the idea that this cosmic consciousness experience, as is true for those other mystics, and we are all mystics in some way, shape, or form, have had that experience, and you described it as an impersonal experience, that it is for everyone. And I really feel that with Ernest in this moment. This experience is for everyone, whereas a near-death experience is a more personal experience that happens to us, for us, through us, as us. And so I think of Ernest as standing in front of us, modeling this extraordinary sense of life is coming to an end on this physical plane, and with joy I'm stepping into whatever is next. And that is a tremendous gift to all of us. And we don't have to just catch that at the end of our life. We can catch it right here and right now. And as I was pondering that thought of the impersonal, the universal of the nature of all of this, I've been reading a book on wilding nature, something that I'm really fascinated with, about returning the land, all the earth, back to its natural state and how we can support that. And that's certainly something I've been doing in my yard for about 10 years now. And there's this huge estate in England that is wilding the land, making it a natural preserve. And Connie would love this because there's like a million birds. So there is this incredible estate of land. And on this estate of land, in the main house, there's an orchard of trees, and there are several large oak trees. And as they look out at all of these beautiful oak trees, they've lived hundreds of years. And there is one oak tree that stands in the middle of the pasture, and it's dying. They can tell by the crown, they can tell by the limbs, they can tell by the ground surrounding the roots that the tree is leaving the building. The tree is exiting earth. And so they call in this tree expert. And They ask him what they should do. Now, most times when we see a dying tree, especially here in Florida, we immediately want to cut it down because it's dying. And at best, it's an ugly eyesore. We should just cut it down. And at worst, it's a danger to our house or to our land, but we just want to get rid of it. And the tree expert looks at this beautiful, stately, ancient oak, and he says, you should never do that. You should honor the dying. This oak tree, in its process of dying, and it is a slow, because we often tend to think of death as a date on the calendar, April 7th, 1960. It's a slow process. It's not a one-time thing. This tree, as it dies, it is going to support the entire preserve. It is going to support all the insects, all the animals, all the soil, all the land around it. Everything will be impacted in a field of oneness from this one oak tree dying. You should honor that tree and accept all of its gifts because it is a blessing to the entire ecosystem. And I thought about that all week, and I said, Ernest is our oak tree. And as he dies, he is a blessing to the entire ecosystem that is each and every one of us here and everyone who is a part of Science of Mind. That ecosystem that's comprised of each of us, we receive a small bit of that oak tree, and we carry that on to the next generation in that field of oneness. And so the idea of this cosmic consciousness experience is a gift and a blessing that is for all of us with love from the ancient oak tree. And so the message for us then, as Ernest is looking out over the last year of his life at all the wisdom he wants to impart from that deep space of oneness and connection, is, what are we going to do with our one wild and precious life? It is so often the fact that we stand there with the specter of death hovering over us instead of the promise of life beckoning us on. Don't wait. You're a gift now. You're a gift to the ecosystem in the fullness of your life. You're a gift to the ecosystem at the end of your life. Each and every one of us is a gift. And so answer that call of spirit. Deepen in that connection and that oneness, and allow this message that comes through him at this cosmic consciousness stage to impact us and how we choose to live right now. How we choose to live right now. So what are the things that Ernest finds to be so incredibly essential that he wants us to catch in this moment? And so many of these things echo the sermon by the Sea Talk, which is going to take place in August, 6 months later. The things that are really important, Ernest lets us know with such clarity. And these are the things that we, as the ecosystem left behind, carry on to the next generation. He talks about the idea of love. The greatest impact we make on the world is to be love. He shares that we are here to talk about God as love, but if our arms are not around each other, then how do we know that's true? So to remain in that state of love, and as always, let that be the foundation of everything. So for each of us, as we take a deep breath and feel our roots sinking down into the earth, we know that that is a sinking down to that presence of love and absorbing all of the nutrients from that. And as those nutrients rise up into the tree, there are several things that Ernest shares with us that are so essential as someone who's standing in the light. He's reminding us that we could profess and confess and exclaim and proclaim that God is all there is, and no one would believe us until something happens when we say it. Because we have no authority in the world whatsoever, except for the authority of the work that follows the word. So that we are not merely giving lip service to this profound spiritual teaching, but to deeply embody it, to call forth the nutrients from the roots, and to let that move through us so that we come out into the world. And this is the gift that we have to offer, is the gift of a life well lived, is the gift of oneness, the gift of wisdom, of light, of well-being, of abundance, of all of these divine qualities. This is who we are. This is what Ernest is imparting to us. It's not our theology. It's not just simply some head knowledge. From constantly standing in that oneness, being that light, there's a knowing that I speak my word, and the work that follows that word is true. And he reminds us again in Sermon by the Sea of the same thing. He says, let us never have any arrogance in our movement, for it indicates spiritual immaturity to me. To stand in the humble, quiet knowing of who we are and the way that we walk through the world transforms everything, everything. So he reminds us to continuously be about the work of spirit, to pray without ceasing. And as he moves deeper into this talk, and he's reminding us of some of the most basic things, he moves into such a deep state of connection. There's a rhythm to his words as he's moving into the light. And it is the same for each and every one of us as we sit with spirit, as we speak our word, as we live our truth. There's a rhythm and a rhyme to our lives every day. And in the end, as Ernest is going through all the things that we should be about and all the things that are most essential, and the shocking fact that the apostles didn't know how to make pancakes, which catches me every time, I always have to stop at that moment and laugh. But he is talking about there are many wonderful religions in the world, and we are not better than the others. We are not more spiritual, and we are not more evolved. We are not more anything other than this one thing. We have co-joined our consciousness with the eternal verity of the universe, that everlasting and eternal Father of all life, and the mother of all creation, forever begetting the only begotten, is begetting him in us right now. And that the word of our mouth is a word of truth in such degree as it emulates and embodies the truth, which sanctifies the word to its unique service of healing, not only the sick, but the poor in heart. We are one. And in the end, he sees us uniting in one great hymn of praise, one great union of effort, one crescendo of song, and one enveloping light of consciousness. And so this talk, this message, is a reminder to each of us that we are that light, that we are that cosmic consciousness. For each of us, that we do, in so many moments, stand between these two worlds, one foot clearly or our roots clearly deep into the earth and ever reaching up into the sky, reaching up into heaven and proclaiming the good news of our spiritual truth. And I love this quote from Rumi, which talks about the way we embrace that moment of knowing and that conscious awareness of what is important. And Rumi reminds us to seek only the knowledge that unties the problems of your life, and seek it soon before your number is up. Leave only what seems to be but is not, and seek what seems not to be and yet it might. So we stand in that space of light. We stand in that cosmic consciousness of knowing. Now on the official date, April 7, 1960, Ernest will be gone. And yet in that year and a half from February 12, 1959 till the beginning of April, there is such a deep connection and love from within him for everyone in our movement, in our community, in his family, in his life, that still echoes and resonates throughout the decades that resides within us. So, what are you going to do with your one wild and precious life? Seek that knowledge, seek that oneness before your number is up. And seek that which doesn't appear to be, but really is, and let go of that which might not seem to be, but could be. Stand in that oneness, in that light, and allow spirit to guide you. And you'll stand with Ernest and say, I see it, and I shall speak no more. And so it is.